Good evening and welcome to Focus on Community tonight. We're in the studio here live at KTOO Radio. And tonight is a special forum, more or less, for the Juneau Reentry Coalition. And we have several guests in the studio tonight who are going to talk about reentering the community after incarceration. Okay, there we go. All right, I thought I got turned off. Am I still on? Okay, good. Anyway, my name is Terry Tibbett, and I'm going to moderate the panel tonight, and hopefully it's going to explain itself. I'm not going to do much explaining. I'm going to just kind of turn it over to some of the guests. First, let me introduce them. On my left is Brent Wilson. He is a probation officer with the Department of Corrections here in Juneau, and also Katie Chapman, who works for the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, NCAD, here in Juneau. Also, Corey Stevens, who is a person who's experienced incarceration and reentry into the community, and also Kara Nelson. Kara Nelson. Okay, good. And Kara Nelson and Christina Wigg, both of whom have also experienced incarceration and have reentered the community successfully. And tonight's forum, more or less, is a highlight, shining the light on people reentering the community after incarceration. So I'd like to start by turning the mic over to Katie Chapman, who is the chair of the Juneau Reentry Coalition. Excuse me, and she is going to tell us a little bit about the Juneau Reentry Coalition.
Thank you, Terry, and thank you for this opportunity for our coalition and for these people here to share their stories tonight and efforts to really help. Our hope tonight is to educate the community about reentry and what that process looks like and really how complex it is and how it's about so many issues. It's not just about a person coming out of jail and going back home. So we'll talk a lot about that later on. But as Terry mentioned, I'm currently serving as the chair for the Juneau Reentry Coalition, and this coalition formed a year ago, back in January 2013. And it's made up of. What our coalition looks like is an association of volunteers. It's all volunteers who are a part. Some of the people are definitely it's part of their work to do reentry work. For example, I mean there are people from Department of Corrections and from the Halfway House who are a part of our coalition, but we also have stakeholders from various nonprofit agencies that provide services to people like all along that continuum of reentry. We have folks representing the AWARE shelter. We have representation from the Alaska Native community. We certainly welcome and we need more representation from the Alaska Native community. We also have individuals from Department of Labor, from the University of Alaska Southeast. I'm just trying to think, from the Alaska Housing and Finance Corporation. So those are just to name a few of our stakeholders and members. To describe more about our coalition, our mission is like many other reentry coalitions and reentry initiatives. It's number one, to promote public safety, but then also to look at all of those barriers that that may inhibit a person's ability to be successful in the community, a person being, we're talking about ex-offenders, people coming out of prison. So our mission really is to try to find ways that can help these people be successful. A theme that keeps coming up in our coalition meetings is safe, like how to have a safe and healthy community. So our coalition, since January, we've met regularly. We meet once a month. I can give information toward the end about our next meeting, but right now we are meeting on a monthly basis, and we also have various work groups looking at different areas of reentry. Right now I think there's like about 8, and to name some of those work groups, there's a work group looking at family support, education, employment, pre-release, post-release, housing. help me out here, Brent.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear mental health,
right.
Behavioral health.
Substance abuse.
Right.
Yeah.
So let me turn it over to Brent to introduce himself and what, in his perspective on what his role in is the Juno, with the Juno Reentry Coalition.
Yeah, thank you, Terry. So again, my name is Brent Wilson. I'm a probation and parole officer for the Department of Corrections. And, you know, I've been interested in reentry for many years. I've been a PO since 2007, and prior to that worked on a grant that dealt with serious and violent offenders. And so transition and seeing people get out of jail and how they struggle to succeed has been something that I feel is that I really need to pursue. It can be frustrating, you know, for me as well. You know, obviously the people that go back to jail, it's frustrating. And so trying to find out what's working, what's not working, create opportunities for the things that do work, and enhance maybe what's already working. So that's my motivation. And again, and I would also like to mirror what Katie said in thanking Kara, Christina, and Corey for being willing to share their stories tonight.
Great. And before we, again, we have a couple of folks that we haven't introduced yet, but we will shortly. Before we go there, I just want to ask the question of you two. Why do we want a reentry coalition? Why do we care? Why does the general community care that a person coming out of incarceration should have a successful reentry? Why does the general community care about that fact? That care about that being smooth and easy?
Well, I think that, you know, most of us want to see people succeed in any event. And then I think there's another side of that where we have people that have struggled to be successful in the community, you know, at some level, a pretty significant level, you know, and it's put them in a place where they've been to jail. And the impact of someone being in jail and repeatedly going back to jail, or the behavior or the things that they do that lead them to jail is damaging to the community, you know, not just to the individual, but it's damaging to the community. And so trying to find ways to help people become successful, figure out a different way to live, a way that doesn't put them at risk to go to jail, to be on supervision. Substance abuse is a huge issue, but...
So staying sober.
Yeah, absolutely. Staying clean and sober.
Being housed and
having a job, supporting themselves, et cetera, is pretty significant. First of all, you know, the reason if they're going to jail, they're doing something that oftentimes is creating a victim. There's damage in the community, and you can bring that all the way down. Even if there's damage, and that damage is mostly to themselves and their family, there's a pretty big impact there. So I could talk a long time about why. And sometimes I think it seems obvious to me. And so please let me know if we need to know more. But it is significant.
I'm just hearing what you're saying. Then if we do take care of people and help them have a successful reentry into the community and help them stay stable, stay in housing, stay employed, stay in treatment, medication management, whatever. If we do that, then the community is going to be safer because the people will be less likely to commit another crime, which would keep the community safer. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly right. You know, so there's a word that's thrown out a lot, you know, recidivism, you know, and that's the word that we use to describe people that reoffend or people that commit crimes again and go back to jail. And so if we can lower that recidivism rate, obviously that has a positive impact on the community. You know, there's less crime, there's fewer victims, people aren't stealing as much, or people aren't harming somebody. There's numerous crimes that happen. It makes for a healthier community.
Sure. Did you have anything to add to that, Katie?
Just that, you know, something that I've been learning through my journey with the coalition is just the huge financial cost to society with incarceration. A jail bed currently costs about $159 a day, and the cost of a community support service is about half of that. And so for me as a treatment provider, the one thing that I like to hear and to know is that community support services, they work. People get well. And you know, so I mean, that keeps me in the positive anyway and hopeful, you know. So I think it's important that we continue to have those services available for people and accessible.
Great. Okay, so the cost is one reason for helping people have successful reentry into the community, and also the safety factor, the fewer victims, fewer crimes being committed. Okay, so that's sort of with that as a baseline for tonight's discussion. I want to open up the discussion and invite one of the three folks here. Okay, I'm seeing Corey's saying, I'll go. So what we've about a couple months ago, we all got together and we did some practicing and telling our stories. And Corey and Kara and Christina are here tonight to kind of give the community a little background on what got them there to the point where they were incarcerated, and then what was really helpful in helping them get out. So Corey Stevens, if you want to go ahead and introduce yourself, tell a little bit about yourself.
All right. Hello, my name is Corey Stevens. I'm a person in long-term recovery. What that means to me is I have been sober since 6-9 of 09. I, like most people that have been incarcerated, have had issues with drug and alcohol addiction, stemming way back to when I was pretty young. I started drinking when I was young and ended up in trouble, and was in my first, I was in a boys' home at the age of 16, where I did a stint in there. And my first, I checked out of there and went into a treatment center. You know, in the boys' home, I realized, and my family realized, and the people around me realized it wasn't so much that I was a bad person or a bad kid, which my record may have shown. I definitely had, you know, I guess they look at it today as a disease. You know, I have an addiction, and from early on, I was okay with that. So after the boys' home and doing a month-long treatment center, I was released back out, and shortly thereafter got into more trouble. I definitely wasn't ready to quit. I was okay with being the person I was being, and from there on, I came up here. I came up here to Alaska from Montana, and to live with my dad up here. And you know, I was okay for a little while. I tried the whole relocation thing, and it worked out for a little while. But I soon found myself into more trouble, and you know, it just continued on from there. I did another relocation to other states, and you know, I went to Nevada after I was here in Alaska, and got some more sales charges there, and spent some time incarcerated in jail in Nevada. After narrowly beating those charges, I moved to another state, and you know, that progressed. I there again moved back up to Juneau here, which I eventually found myself incarcerated in jail here in Juneau, and this time there was just something different. You know, there was something, I wanted something different. I was tired of always running from myself and from my addiction. And, you know, something changed. I can't say what that is, but something definitely changed. And I reached out partially to maybe get out of jail earlier, but I reached out to check myself into treatment. And, you know, it might have started out as a way to get out of the situation I was in, although it did not help me get out sooner. I did my time, but found out shortly before I got out that I got accepted into treatment. So I definitely wanted something different. So the day I got out of jail, I checked myself willingly into an inpatient treatment center here in Juneau, where I was introduced to Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, which there I found support, and it gave me time to get back into society without being thrown right back to where I was. It gave me this period to progress and find out really which way I was going to go, help me separate from the people I was around, and keep separated from that, make that choice to do that, because no one could do that for me. It was something I had to realize. So in treatment here, like I say, I found the programs of NA and AA, and started a relationship back up with my family members, which has been a huge stepping stone in my recovery. You know, my dad and my stepmom, they accepted me back into their house when I completed treatment. You know, I don't know where I would have went if I wasn't able to go to their house, you know, and given another chance at 27 years old, after messing up for the majority of my life, to go and, you know, get a chance. So I think it's a big thing to have support, whether it be family members or support from NA and AA. You know, I got to live with my parents and humble myself a little bit by being 27 years old and living by rules that I may have thought was silly, but it was definitely something I needed. I also went through a program called Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. It's a program that helps with job placement. Like I was saying earlier, alcohol and drug addiction is considered as a disease nowadays. So there is funding and there are programs out there. You just have to find them. And some of those hoops can be long and hard to jump through. Same with maybe getting into treatment when you're in active addiction. That was something that I had thought about a few times and was not willing to follow through with that progress. So, yeah, I guess that's my story.
Thanks, Corey. That's I appreciate your being willing to share it on the radio. That's a big deal, and thanks for that. And before we go on, I just want to let people know that you're listening to KTOO Radio FM in Juneau, Alaska, and this is Focus on Community. Tonight we're speaking with members of the Juneau Reentry Coalition, and if you're interested in what's going on with the Juneau Reentry Coalition, it at one time was called the Juneau Prisoner Reentry Coalition, just so you know what kind of reentry we're talking about. And there is no website, but there is an email, and that's JunoReentry. That's two E's next to each other. So JunoReentry@gmail.com, or you can call 463-3755 if you want to know more, or if you want to join, if you have an interest. So just a little housekeeping there. I guess maybe I could ask Kara or Christina to go next and tell your story.
Hi, thanks, Terry. My name's Kara Nelson, and I am in recovery. It's been almost 3 years now. I've been clean and sober. My story actually starts out a little different than a lot of people I know, in that I had a great childhood. I have a great family. You know, I had all the support in the world. But as a young child, I just always had low self-esteem, and I didn't understand where that came from until many years later. But, you know, it started to, drugs and alcohol were the antidote for me, because I didn't know how to live, I guess, in society under normal rules or like regular people did. From the very beginning, you know, I used very hard and a lot and more than anyone else I knew. But, you know, at that time, obviously, I didn't think I had a problem. You know, after years and years of using that way, I did get in some trouble. And I ended up, I actually was born and raised in Ketchikan, Alaska, and grew up in different logging camps. My dad was a logger for many years. And I had a lot of different experiences in Alaska and moved around kind of a lot, I guess. But I always had that supportive family, and so I guess maybe that's where it was hard for me to understand that I could have a problem because my surroundings looked so normal and perfect. But when I used, it just wasn't the same as anyone else. And so when I did finally get in some trouble, I went to treatment when I was 25, and I'd gotten my third DWI at the time. And it was my first introduction, actually, to recovery services and just kind of opening my mind up to solutions that maybe I didn't know about previously. And that's kind of where it started for me to want to really do something different and understanding that I did have a disease, but there was also a solution. It was actually a really exciting time for me, and I was stayed clean for a couple of years at that time. But I didn't deal with the core issues, and I thought I could just get clean and live life and everything would be great. But, you know, I didn't work a program. I didn't want to look at myself. I didn't want to see where these kind of originated from. And so, it, you know, life happened, and I got overwhelmed. And next thing you know, I was worse off than I'd ever been before and went places I never thought I would ever go. And through that, ended up going to prison for drug-related crimes, and had two felonies. By then, my record actually is quite large at this point. And even then, I, you know, just really had a victim mentality and wasn't ready to let go of a lot of, you know, hurts and things that had happened. And even though I had known about recovery and I had a supportive family who I had completely screwed over time and time again and, you know, knew, felt very worthless, and of course I should be punished because why wouldn't I be? I was a horrible person. You know, and when I went to jail for those two felonies, I was up in Highland Mountain for a couple years, and they had some amazing programs up there, and it really started that healing for me again. And, you know, I realized by then that I really needed to deal with some issues that I had never really dealt into. And, you know, that low self-esteem had allowed me to make all sorts of bad decisions, whether that's relationships or whatever, you know, that all snowballed into this now criminal life that I had been living. And I knew that wasn't where I wanted to be. And in my mind, I probably thought I wasn't really that bad until I was sitting in a jail cell wearing yellow felon clothes, realizing, yes, it was that bad. And the cool thing, though, is that there is a lot of help. You know, when you're ready to do something different, there is a solution out there. Some of the barriers that I found when I got out of jail was that I did have drug felonies, and so I wasn't eligible for any kind of public assistance or governmental help. Also, Alaska housing, I couldn't get on any kind of housing because I had drug felonies. It's only other felonies, I believe, is fine, but for drug felonies, there's a ban. So at that time, you know, I do have children, and so there's a lot of different things that had to be overcome at the time, and I feel really fortunate because I was able to, like Corey was saying, I also went through DVR, Division of Vocational Rehabilitation. They put me through school to get my appraiser's license. My dad was appraiser here for many years. And I had been helping out for a long time, so that was just something I wanted to do and loved doing. And because of my felonies, I wasn't able to get my license. And so that was kind of another barrier that I realized I'm going to have to figure something else out. And so I ended up going back to school, and that was another barrier because I couldn't get government help with my felonies until I had a certain amount of time. behind me. And, you know, I was just able to have a lot of great mentors that believed in me, because these were all things that were completely impossible with my record to overcome. And I feel like it was a true miracle that there were certain people that were just placed in my life, and I was able to at that time see it in that way and take that help and ask for it and move forward. And even then it was very difficult. I was able to get housing and, you know, have a lot of help with different things that a lot of people don't have help with. And I do have supportive parents who were, you know, after I was able to prove myself and have some time out, that were then, you know, willing to be there for me. I think that, you know, it's really important to, like Corey was saying also, you know, have recovery programs, where that's AA, NA, there's several other programs out there too, or just have those support systems, peer support. That's one of the things I really enjoy about the Reentry Coalition, is a lot of the committees that are just focused on having that support and peer support. And so anyway, today, you know, I did get my degree last year. I now work in a job that I have so much passion for, and I'm able to take everything that I've ever done to my communities and turn it around into a positive thing. And it's really important for me to do that, because I know what I've done, you know, was wrong, and the crimes I committed for me was because I didn't have a control on my addiction. You know, yes, I committed those crimes, but I needed to get to the core of the issues, get to the addiction, and then move forward. And so I'm just really grateful to be where I'm at today, and I really hope to help other people to find freedom from whatever it is that's holding them back. So thanks for having me.
Great. Thanks, Kara. That was great. And I just want to clarify, peer support is a an example of peer support would be like AA or like Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous. But there's also some strong peer support movement growing in Alaska. There's the Alaska Peer Support Consortium, and they have a working title called Forensic Peer Support, which is working to get more and more people who have been incarcerated to get some, you know, advocacy skills, some self-help skills, whatever, that would help them to go back into the prison, or at least on the outside help catch people as they're coming out and help mentor them through the process. And that's kind of what you meant by peer support, right?
Right. Yeah, we've had several panels and different things just to really bring people in and give them that support,
you know, because a lot of people don't want to be in maybe 12-step meetings, or, you know, for me, I find a lot of my support, too, through my church and different spiritual advising type situations. But we have a great movement going on with the Reentry Coalition and life skills, peer support. We're hoping to really get it going here to celebrate recovery and not just focus on the problem, because there's a lot of great recovery going on in our town.
Great, great. Thanks. It looks like Katie wanted to say something, and then I'll introduce Christina.
Well, I just wanted to point out that a theme so far has been the struggle with addiction. And Kara had mentioned that, you know, though she's, you know, holding herself accountable and taking responsibility for the crimes that she committed, there is also the underlying issue of addiction. And so for me, what this conversation brings about is, you know, the awareness that our community needs more education about addiction, and not just addiction, but recovery and what recovery looks like and what kind of support systems, you know, are available in our community, or what they could look like. You know, we can make something. If it's not here, let's make it. So
great. Awesome. Yeah. Thanks, Katie. And again, Katie's with the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence. And also in the studio, we have Brent Wilson, from the probation officer from the Department of Corrections. And we have three people that are being very brave and sharing their stories with us on the radio tonight, their experiences with incarceration. And if you just tuned in, we are this special edition of the Focus on Community is focusing on the Juno Reentry Coalition, and that's reentry to the community after incarceration, if you just tuned in. So at this point, I'd like to invite Christina Wigg to tell her story. She's come down tonight and is anxious and excited to do this.
Well, my name is Christina Wigg, and I, too, have been incarcerated and have been in and out of the treatment programs, not only in Eagle River, but here in Juneau as well. I grew up in what I thought was an ideal family as well. I grew up having good grades. I grew up with a very supportive family, and though I didn't have my mother there, I still had my father, my brother, my sister, and my aunts, and just everybody that was always really close with me and really supportive. And through that time, you know, my family has had some ups and downs, and seeing all that helped me to realize that I needed to not grow up in that same manner and try to make a difference. So I tried really hard in school. I was in the early scholars program. I got good grades. I played basketball. I did everything that I could do to try to be a good person for myself as well as for my family and those around me. Through that time, you know, my sister moved, my brother moved, and it kind of just left me and my dad for a little bit. And so I felt like I was important, as in, like, I needed to stand up and take a role because, you know, big sister and brother were gone. And through that, my dad's girlfriend had come into our life, and she became what was like another mother to me. My sister was my mother pretty much for all growing up, and then once she was gone, it was like my dad's girlfriend, and she was there for about 7 years and made a really big impact in my life. And once I think she moved is where I really hit my rock bottom. Through the time of high school, of course, like some kids, I'm not saying most, we try, you know, the drinking and the, you know, smaller minor drugs and whatnot. And I didn't see any problem with that then. Now that I look back, I see, wow, there was some blackout times. There was some not really good experiences that I went through. And again, it wasn't until I got a little bit older and started trying the harsher drugs, and cocaine was the big one. And again, back to my dad's girlfriend leaving, I noticed at that time I really hit my rock bottom, and it was tough. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to step up and be all these people in his life and everyone else's life and uphold this role. And so I just went downhill. I went into a bad relationship that was really abusive, and that on top of it caused me to use even more and be more self-destructive to myself. What went from using ended up going into selling. And during this time of selling and using and abuse, I ended up getting pregnant, and I started feeling like there needed to be a change in life, that this wasn't the life that I wanted for my firstborn child to come into. So I tried really hard. I tried to stay clean and do everything that I needed to do. And lo and behold, when things were going good, I find out that there's pending charges against me. And I ended up going into jail because of this. So here I am, this first-time mother, pregnant, in felon clothes, in jail. And it was the hugest wake-up call that I could ever imagine. It was the most embarrassing experience that I'd ever have to go through, I feel. And anyways, I started realizing day after day after day of being in there and not getting out until 7.5 months pregnant what it was that I thought I wanted to do with my life. And it was to stay clean and work on going to treatment and bring this baby into the world like he had deserved. So I got out and I went to treatment in Anchorage and had my son there, and I thought that I had it all. I thought that just that little couple months of treatment was it for me, and I came back here to Juneau because I felt like I needed support. Well, I didn't find support. I found drugs again. And I had this big fear because they were telling me I could be facing up to 20 years. And so my way of coping with that was to use every day until my sentencing came. And sentencing did come, and I got, I had to go back into Lemon Creek again, and OCS took my kid from me, and then I got transferred to Eagle River, which is outside of Anchorage, Highland Mountain Correctional Center, and I feel that that's where the biggest change of my life happened. As hard as it was exactly what I needed. I entered into the RSAP program there.
RSAP stands for?
Residential Substance Abuse Treatment. Yeah. But the wonderful thing about that program was it wasn't only intensive, but it was a year. And for me, I think that that's exactly what I needed. As much as I begged them to let me out after the 6 months, a year was what I needed. But they addressed your behaviors each day. And I truly believe that for me, it was my behaviors that needed to be addressed first before we went on to the substance use, because it was my criminal thinking errors and behaviors that led me to continually violate and use and be destructive to myself as well as the community. And so I ended up, I had a time cap. They pretty much said, you need to do this program and you need to do it for a year. You're not going to get your son back. Hearing those blatant words like that was what it was. So I went into treatment basically for my son at first. And it took about halfway through in order to realize that this is what I need. I became senior of the program. I started running a clean, good, honest program, and it felt amazing. So I got out on parole and came back here after graduating the RSAP program in 2007. Came back here and went to the halfway house, and that was, I believe, my crutch. I think if they would have just let me out on parole like I thought still I could do on my own, then things would have been very different for me now. Being at the halfway house and having the support and the meetings and the outpatient treatment, the inpatient treatment, all of these things that connect you back again to the outside world and to recovery and other people that are in these programs that are running a clean program was exactly what I needed. So after many, many years of being on probation, there was some ups and downs. Not everything was perfect. Not everything was perfect after I graduated. There was some violations, and I really had to take a look at that, and it was going back into that cell again and back into that gray, musty, same smell and hearing those prison doors close that I was like, this is not me. This is not my life. This is not – I didn't work so hard for this to happen to me again. So after that, it was completely wiping everybody out of my life who I thought were my friends and who I – thought I needed in my life. And truly what I needed was my supporters, sober people, and my son and my family. That's what I needed. And it took many, many years to see that. So after many years of having these people in my life and being on probation and having really good supporters, I don't think that I would be where I'm at today, you know, the counselors, the POs, you know, ragging and ragging on you when you say, when you're trying to just, I'm fine, and my family being 100% supportive, accepting me for who I am, loving me today for still who I am, regardless of the mistakes I've made, is the most beautiful thing, and that's helped me to be where I'm at today, you know, people accepting me to, you know, live in their houses or having a place to live and just having a stable job, you know, that's really what kept me afloat, is having good supporters in my life that have helped me reach my goals today. And successfully, after 6 years, I've completed probation just recently in August, and it has been more than a blessing to see what it's like. But the struggles just don't stop, you know, they're still here, and every day I still have to take a look at what I'm doing with my life, what's good, what's not good, and really try to reevaluate that and who's in my life so that I continue to stay on a good path and stay out of prison and try to do all that I can to give back to the community today. And one of the big things that I do now is the Reentry Coalition. You know, I feel like this is my meeting, you know, coming to these. I'm a huge supporter of AA and NA, but I feel like this Reentry Coalition really has me grounded in a place that I've never felt so good before. And I just want to continue to teach people about it, to make the community aware of all these wonderful things that are happening and the greatness that can happen after, you know, violations and prisons and yellow clothes and felons. There's more to people like me than just that. There's a lot of room for change. There's a lot of room for error, but I feel the more support and awareness, you know, that the community has, I feel that there'll be more success with a lot of things.
Great. And thanks, Christina. And one of the things just to tag on to what you just said is that the Juno Reentry Coalition is sponsoring a number, or has sponsored and is planning to sponsor in the future, a number of public forums for people who might be interested in knowing more, doing a little bit more drill down and getting to know what are some of the barriers in the community that make it difficult for people to reenter the community successfully. And what are some of the services and the things that do work to help people transition more successfully? And we're about halfway through the program, and I want to spend the rest of the time talking about some of the barriers and some of the successes. But first, I want Katie to just let everybody know about the forum that's coming up this week, or is it next week?
So this week on Wednesday, our family...
The date?
Wednesday, February 19th, our family support work group volunteers have organized a family forum. The target audience is family members of people who are or have been incarcerated. And our goal is to try to solicit information from family members about their experience. What services exist in our community? What are those that worked and have helped you? And what is needed? What can we do differently? So we'll have some light snacks and beverages from Bee's Bakery. Thank you, Bee. Yeah, it's open to anybody. If you're not a family member, if you want to come and observe, please come. 6:30, Northern Light Church, Wednesday, February 18th.
And you're calling it a what again?
Family forum.
Family forum for family members, addressing family members who have people in their family who were incarcerated.
That's right.
Right.
And it's Wednesday the 19th, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Sorry.
Yeah, you said that, I think. Yeah. So did you look like you had something to say, Brent?
Just to kind of build on what I heard from all three of Corey, Kara, and Christina, they all either said or alluded to, you know, the idea of having making a choice and being ready for change. And I think that's the important distinction. You know, we can address, and you know, like you said, we're going to talk about some of the resources that are helpful and what worked and or maybe barriers, but we're not going to be able, just providing resources to everybody isn't going to make everybody successful that's gotten out and that is trying to transition back to the community, because not everybody's trying to transition to the community. They're just out and they're doing their supervision. And so, you know, these three folks today, and they had these moments, you know, they had these windows, you know, and it's like a window of opportunity. So if we have the resources available, that's the time. So if they're available and, you know, as a probation officer or the coalition, you know, through either, you know, peer supporters or other members or family members, if those resources are available and we can get people hooked up with those resources, whether it be housing, employment, additional training. You know, Corey and Kara both talked about DVR, vocational rehabilitation, any number of things. If those things are available, we get people connected with those right now, we can take advantage of the change. You know, the rest of them, it might take a while. You know, and it might take another time for them inside. You know, it could be that they're sitting in a cell at some point and they need to sit there one more time before they figure it out. It could be a family member who makes a plea. I don't, you know, everybody's got a story, everybody's successful now, what it was. But I think having those resources available is key, because if they're ready and there's nothing there, it sometimes it's pretty fragile, and so it's hard. It's easy to just say, I there's nothing for me.
Well, and just that was Brent Wilson, a probation officer with the Department of Corrections, speaking. And one thing I just want to say is that the reason that the statewide reentry task force was formed, and the reason the Juno Reentry Coalition and several other coalitions around the state were even formed in the last couple of years, was because there has been an insufficient number or an insufficient amount of resources available in the community for people who were ready. There often aren't enough substance abuse treatment beds available, or they're expensive, and the people getting out don't have the resources to pay for them. There's a whole bunch of barriers that people getting out of prison have experienced. I think the mission of the coalitions and the statewide task force is to try to kind of build up some of more of those services. So in that light, could I ask you three to, or anyone actually on the panel, and again, we're talking with members of the Juno Prisoner Reentry Coalition that is happening here in Juno. And what could you say, could you guys just kind of give some examples of some barriers that you experienced when you first got out, and how the community wasn't ready to receive you?
Well, this is Kara. One of the things that stands out in my mind, I mean, there is several barriers. One of the biggest things for myself was just my own self-image, and then having that stigma in society in general and believing it myself. So to get beyond that really took a lot of people just being there. And, you know, Brent talked a little bit about, you know, you have to be ready. And then on top of having to be ready, you have to have those resources ready for you. And, you know, there's a lot of people now that I have been in recovery and have been successful for a while. And I also just recently got off probation, actually only about a month, 2 months almost, maybe a month and a half ago. And I was also not successful, you know, as far as I did go back to jail a few times and had to have a lot more lessons to learn before I was successful. For myself, you know, the biggest thing for me was just that self-acceptance. And I can't even tell you how much my life has changed since I've been able to get past that and be able to advocate for other people and just really want to, highlight the fact that, yes, we do screw up over and over and over again with this disease and, in the meantime, commit crimes. But there is so much hope. There's so many people here now. I mean, all three of us have been on probation. We're now successful people in the community. We do several things out there, you know, to show other people that they can too. And I just think it's not celebrated enough. It's just not shown enough, you know, that these barriers are there. And I guess my thing would be to say, if you don't want to, you know, be that hands-on person supporting someone entering into the community, let us do it and just support what we're doing and, you know, maybe not be a barrier in, you know, what we're trying to do in the community. So I don't know if that answered your question.
So Kara had mentioned earlier that she had one of the barriers that you experienced getting out was that you couldn't get housing assistance because because you had drug crimes. Corey or Christina, did you were there any things like that housing or that, you know, not having access to substance abuse? What community services were not available, and could you say are still maybe currently not available in sufficient numbers for people?
You know, Terry, I was pretty fortunate. There are some people that are not as fortunate with things such as housing and jobs, you know, and stuff like that. I would say it really comes down to, you know, people getting and being accessible to have chances, like Brent was saying. You know, a lot of the stars aligned for me where I had the chances to prove myself. You know, I had The chance to live at my parents' house and prove myself. I had the chance to go through DVR and prove myself at a job. That program placed me in a job, paid my employer so I could prove myself. I was given that chance, you know. It really comes down to supporters and chances, I think. And it's what the people do with those. But if they're not accessible to us, then people will choose the same path that we've always choose, because that's the easiest path, is to go back out there. This recovery that we're doing, that is not the easiest way. The easiest way is to go back out and use and do the same thing and end up back in jail. That's really the easiest thing to do. So I really believe in the chances that I'm given. And like Brent said, not everybody will make it. But if we are given the chances, there's a number of us that will save people from being on the streets and stealing and robbing and committing crimes.
Okay, it looks like Katie wants to say something too.
Yeah, I want to point out, when a person is released from having been in jail, they're at their most vulnerable point in life. Like, that is the turning point for them when they're released. Corey, Kara, and Christina, they have very fortunate stories. They had systems in place. They were all released into a level of supervision with the adult probation office. So they had their probation officer's support and were getting connected to services right away. I've read some data collected by Department of Corrections research analysts that misdemeanors make up about 78% of the releases from Alaska's institutions, contract jails, halfway houses, which means, so about 80% of people getting released from the prisons are getting released into just the community with no probation officers, just who knows what happens to them. So what happens to them? Well, I know just from people's stories and working in this field, well, some people have nowhere to go. They can't afford housing. Housing's so expensive in Juneau, and some people's criminal records limit them from getting those housing opportunities. Landlords, I mean, they don't want somebody who has a criminal record renting from them. No more questions asked, you know. maybe they were incarcerated and got stabilized on psychotropic meds for a little while, so like any kind of mental health conditions were stabilized. Well, they get released, they don't have access to health care or getting their medication, so they start to destabilize again. Maybe they had a little bit of clean time while they're incarcerated too, and they might be ready to get into treatment once they're released, but there's this long process of getting into treatment, and you have to get on a waiting list or fill out the paperwork or go get a TB shot or a general physical, and you don't have any money, and you don't have transportation, mm-hmm. or you don't have a place to go live. So you go back to maybe the boyfriend who was abusing you or the girlfriend who was abusing you and using, and then you end up engaging in all of those behaviors that led to criminal thinking, criminal activity, and you go back to jail. So it's this revolving door in this cycle. That's what the Reentry Coalition, that's what we're talking about. That's what we're looking at. Like, what can we do to change that? You know, there's several ways. I mean, just sometimes connecting providers together and giving them that space and time so that they can share information about their programs and gaps in services on a local level, I mean, sometimes that helps a little bit. But we also have larger conversations about policy changes.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you, Katie, for that broader perspective. I appreciate that. That was kind of what I was hoping to get at a little bit. And I wanted to give Christina the chance to, if you had something you wanted to say on those lines of some of the what services were lacking for you that made it more difficult for you to reentry? And then by the way, I'm going to pivot to what was successful. I want to end on what's successful, and we have probably about 10 more minutes. And again, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to members of the Juneau Reentry Coalition talking about some of the people talking about their experiences with incarceration and returning to the community. My name is Terry Tibbett, and I'm the advocacy coordinator for the Alaska Mental Health Board, and I'm moderating with Brent Wilson, who is from DOC, Department of Corrections, Katie Chapman, who is from the National Council on Alcoholism and Drug Dependence, and also Corey Stevens, Kara Nelson, and Christina Wigg, who are all people with lived experience who are telling their personal stories tonight. And Christine, did you want to pick up on that?
I was really fortunate with job placement when I got out. I was working actually two jobs for a while. I had some pretty accepting bosses, which really helped out for me. The struggle that I've had, especially the past year, is the housing. I've must have applied for at least 50 to 60 places, you know, for my son and I to gain back stability, and everybody just keeps turning me down. There's that one box on there, you know, do you have a felony? And it's like, oh gosh, you know, but I'd rather be upfront and honest and have somebody know me for what I was and who I am today. And a lot of people just don't look at it that way, and that's fine. There's nothing I can do about that, but just keep trying and trying. So housing is really difficult. I'm currently rooming right now with a friend, and again, like I said, I've been applying for over a year for a place, and I just can't seem to get one that's going to fit within my financial needs as a single mother. So with that, with people looking at that one checked box probably before the whole application, this is where my biggest fear comes in. People judging me for my past and not seeing who I am today. I'm very fortunate to have, again, a really loving family and really good, caring, loving friends that don't judge me for that, but are with me and supporting me for today, for who I am and the changes that I'm continuing to make. And I feel that if there was more of that, there'd be a big change in the recidivism rate here in Juneau.
Very good. Yeah, Kara?
I was just going to add to that, too. You know, when the options for housing when you come out of prison is the halfway house, which there's only 6 beds there for women, and also the Juneau house, which is kind of a transitional three-quarter, or I think it's called transitional living now, which isn't a sober or, I shouldn't say that, it's not a designated sober living, but so they're really, you know, like Christina was saying, having to check that box is terrifying. It's terrifying to know that all they're going to see is what's on paper. And I think it's one of the other things about the Reentry Coalition and being a part of the peer support team, which Christina and I are both a part of, and Corey, is being that family that people might not have, that supportive family. So, you know.
And we have about 4 minutes left, it looks like, maybe just 3 minutes. Okay, so and thanks for that. And I guess that just, there's so much more to say, and I just want to encourage people who want to know more to contact the Juneau Reentry Coalition. Katie Chapman, who's here tonight, is the chair, and you can reach her at JunoReentry@gmail.com, and that there's two E's between re and entry. So JunoReentry@gmail.com, and then the telephone number to call is 463-3755. And I think there was one thing I just wanted to point out, that there are a lot of services that people are working on. These coalitions are trying to get more counseling available, more substance abuse treatment, life skills training, job coaching, post-secondary education support, peer support, AA and NA, legal services, transportation services, provisional driver's license. There's some legislation at the Capitol that is working on that. Public awareness, addressing the stigma associated with people who have had experience in prison, case management for people with mental illness, training for probation officers and parole officers, and relaxed restrictions on public assistance to felons. So those are some of the efforts that the coalitions are working on. And with that said, I want to thank the panelists or the guests for coming in tonight and speaking from the Juneau Reentry Coalition. And again, my name is Terry Tibbett, and I appreciate the folks who usually have this show focus on community for letting us have the show tonight to talk about the Juneau Reentry Coalition. And with that, we'll say good night.